It seems fitting that we follow the prayer offered by our president just 10 minutes ago with a few words about the man who is leading our troops tonight, because he too has an amazing spiritual quality you don't often find in a successful general. I refer, of course, to General Sir Bernard Law Montgomery, leader of all Allied ground forces. Montgomery is a colorful, almost a legendary figure, but his voice is little known. Only a few moments ago, BBC carried a broadcast by General Montgomery, which we bring you now.
I want every soldier to know that I have complete confidence in the successful outcome of the operations that we are now about to begin. With stout hearts and with enthusiasm for the contest, let us go forward to victory.
Let me tell you something about this man whose voice you have just heard. The man who was called Monty by your son. I know him very well, and I'm sure you'd like to know him, too. Monty, I said, has a tremendous spiritual quality about him. He has lived an austere, almost monk-like existence. And strangely enough, the one thing he hates above all else is bloodshed. Late last September, the Fifth Army had established itself on the beaches of Salerno and was off on the road to Rome. I was with General Montgomery then, and I asked him how long it would be before we took Rome. What do the troops think about that? He asked me. Oh, they're fairly optimistic, I told General Montgomery. They think they'll be in Rome within 3 weeks or so. Montgomery laughed, and then he said seriously, if the winter isn't too severe, if we don't have too much rain, and if we have good luck, I expect we'll be in Rome sometime in the late spring. At the time, I thought that Montgomery was fooling. I thought he was merely indulging in his well-known sense of the dramatic. But 2 days ago, when our troops did enter Rome, I recalled his words. Monty had been right once more. This magnificent general who was leading our ground forces in the invasion has a habit of being right. I have never seen a general who was venerated by his men, as is the little man in the black beret. His officers sometimes resent the way he treats them. He insists upon them being in perfect physical condition, and he has been known to immediately transfer or demote officers who couldn't stand the strain of a forced 20-mile march. His discipline is rigid, even in the desert. But his men will do anything he asks because they know one thing. They know that when Monty gives the order to advance, they will have everything they need in the way of weapons, supplies, and air cover. Monty, who has a reputation as a daring, dashing, slashing sort of a general, is, on the contrary, the most careful of men. No general is more reluctant to attack unless he is fully prepared. No general is less willing to take unnecessary chances. His men of the Eighth Army, and now the American-Canadian troops, who fight side by side with the British, know this. They know, too, that in any army headed by Montgomery, there will be no unnecessary casualties. Monty does not believe that men are expendable. He would rather lose 100 tanks or guns than one man. That is why the men who fight under him tonight fight with such perfect confidence. Outwardly cold, calculating, intense, Monty is human underneath his hard-bitten exterior, and his men know that. He can't fool them. They know that when they serve under him, their lives will not be wasted. Today, that should be a comfort to thousands of American parents who quite naturally look toward the coming days with anxiety. If your son serves under Montgomery, he serves under the greatest tactical general in the world. And he serves under a man who is vitally concerned with the welfare and the safety of every one of his men. Yes, Monty is human after all. I remember when I left him that bright September afternoon in Italy. He wore his shirt open at the neck, and he wore his tan shorts, and his black beret was perched jauntily on his head. He's very proud of that black beret. I was just about to drive away when he stopped me, and he asked almost shyly. He said, by the way, I've heard a report that the girls in New York are wearing hats copied after my beret. Is that true? I told him I didn't know. But if he performs a military miracle we all think he is capable of performing, if he beats Rommel on the continent for the third time, I think the girls of our country might well honor him by copying his impudent, defiant, jaunty black beret.